Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to our short film distribution panel, where you're going to find out how to make millions of dollars from your eight-minute genius. My name is Roberta Monroe, and I'm going to be your moderator today. We've made a little list here of where you can find us all. I wrote a book called How Not to Make a Short Film, Secrets from a Sundance Programmer. I programmed shorts at Sundance for 5 years, and now I live in Los Angeles and run my own company there. And shorts are obviously my passion, and I would love for you guys to make money, or at least learn how to not spend so much money so that the money you do make makes a difference. We have an amazing panel of people up here today. I'm very excited. And we're going to do a little housekeeping, just make sure that you turned everything off or that it's not lighting up or beeping. There will be time for a Q&A at the end for you to ask questions, so please write them down as we go along. Make sure that when you do have a question, you wait for the microphone, because they're recording this for a podcast. And we are going to go down the panel. We're going to start with Liz. Everybody's going to talk for about 5 to 7 minutes, and then we'll open it up for Q&A at the end. We are going to take a look at a three-minute episode of Brandon's
web series
called
Purple Stuff TV.
And, so I'm excited. Please, Liz. I think you should. I think this only goes so far, so it's me and you.
All right, cool. Hi there, everyone. My name is Liz Shannon Miller, and I've been writing. I come more from the web side. I've been writing about web video since 2006 for various publications. I'm currently a contributor at GigaOhm.com. GigaOhm.com, you should go there. It's a great website. And I come to this, I basically have been chronicling the adventures of people trying to make money and make businesses out of web content. And finding ways to take a short film a web series, that sort of thing, and make it into a sustainable business. And I've also been chronicling the people who have not done that, but how they've managed to find their own level of success along the way. So that's me. Hi.
Hey, everybody. My name is Brandon Broussard. I'm a filmmaker, an entrepreneur out from Los Angeles, California. I used to write for Tyler Perry shows like House of Pain and Meet the Browns, and I didn't like it that much, and so I quit, and I used the money that I made from that and other ventures to start Purple Stuff TV. I started right when Chappelle's show went off air, and I really missed it. I thought, like, there was a void then in, like, sketch comedy on TV. So I started Purple Stuff, which I got the name from, like, his stand-up when he talks about all the kids running to the refrigerator for Sunny D. And there's that one little black kid in the back that's like, I want that purple stuff. And so, you know, I thought, you know, that's what we want to be. We want to be that kind of obscure, you know, voice of comedy that certain people reach for in the back of the fridge or the TV guide. So I've been making my sketch show for like 2 years, and we've had a lot of success. We've had great investors, and we're close to getting it on TV, which is our goal. But that's who I am. And in a second, I guess I'll show you guys one of our videos that was really popular.
Great. Hi, everybody. I'm Christine Boulware.
Can you get into the mic?
Sorry. Listen. Can everybody hear me? Okay. I'm Christine Boulware, and I am the founder and co-owner of a short film distribution platform called IndieFilms.tv. Unlike my colleagues, I am not a filmmaker, but my brother is a filmmaker, so I claim his history. My brother had a film that went to Sundance, and which we were all excited about, who wouldn't be? And I asked him who was there, and he said a ton of distribution people, because everybody, no offense, Robert, and Sundance were looking for distribution deals. I was absolutely shocked and realized that independent filmmakers who have the most amazing voices and have things to say and things to share that we all should hear had absolutely really no way for the vast majority of people to see your work. And so I sort of conceived of IndieFilms.com in 2005. We were unfortunately or fortunately ahead of the technology. So we've been in development for almost 6 years now. We launched and have now relaunched. I'm very excited about the possibilities, and I'm sort of the author of this panel, and I'm interested in sort of suggesting to you as an idea that short filmmakers can make a ton of money. We just have to put ourselves to sort of together to think about it. I'm excited about two of my colleagues here because they've both been sort of Brandon to my left and Chris to my right, who have started sort of projects in space that didn't really exist. Episodes on the web, you know, sort of in a dynamic kind of way. Chris will tell you about, he was one of the first bloggers with Stomp Tokyo. So we know that we can create new space where space doesn't exist. And the purpose of our discussions today, we hope, is to convince you of the same. Thank you.
Thanks. Hi, my name is Chris Holland. Yes, many years ago, I wrote about movies at a website called Stomp Tokyo. This was in the 90s when people writing about Godzilla movies on the web was a rarity. And then someone invented the word blog, and I thought, I don't want to be associated with that, so I quit. Actually, what happened was I started actually working in film, at first at film festivals and then at a distribution company called B-Side, which also worked very intimately with film festivals. And along the way, I heard festival directors answering the same questions from filmmakers every day. And I thought, you know, somebody should just write these down and publish them. And that's how a book called Film Festival Secrets came to be. I have a complimentary website and unfortunately, blog at filmfestivalsecrets.com. So please do check that out.
Thank you. So one of the recent conversations that I've been having with filmmakers directly is around this glutted marketplace that we are in. That when I started programming at Sundance, we received 2,200 short film submissions. And in 2012, they received 7,765 short films. In the hopes of, you know, gaining a spot in the 65 that they selected, which is 20 less than Sundance has ever selected for short films. So you have a lot of competition, and most of it's bad. And when I say bad, I don't mean it sucks. I mean it's not accomplished, and that it's mostly the stuff that you're going to watch on YouTube. And I believe that part of what filmmakers really need to understand is that we have moved, we might be kicking and screaming, but we are being dragged into the commodification of our art and having to see ourselves as entrepreneurs. In order to stand out in this marketplace, you don't only have to be good, and you know, your film doesn't only have to be good, but you have to be good at getting people to watch your film. And if you want to make money once the film is done and you're working, you know, you're trying to get distribution, whether it's online distribution like indie films, or you go the traditional route with a shorts distributor, you still have to do your own marketing. And it's very hectic out there. So what I would like to pose to, I'm going to start with you, Brandon, and talk about, because I feel like you were very connected already coming into the game. You knew a lot of people, you had some money, and you certainly had resources in terms of crew and cast. And what would you tell filmmakers who don't necessarily have those resources? What is the first step?
Well, you know, like, honestly, when I... when I first started, we still weren't shooting with like a huge crew. Like, we didn't realize how professional the product still needed to be, because we saw like Lonely Island and some other stuff. And we were like, man, they got on SNL off of this? Like, I mean, no offense, the stuff was funny, but the quality, it wasn't what you saw on TV. It definitely wasn't on the same level. And so when we first started, I had two $700, you know, home cameras that I bought from like Circuit City, which I don't even think exists now or whatever. But it was like two, you know, little Canon cameras that took mini DV tapes. And eventually, like, I bought some small, like, camera lights from Sam's or something like that. And we just shot. You know, we went out there and we did it. And the biggest thing that people would tell me was that I see potential, but what I love most is that you continue to do it. Is that you put a product out and that you finish it and that it's actually up on the web every single Monday, like you say that it's going to be, that it's there. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the biggest things, is just doing it. The other thing was that after somebody did recognize us, we got an investor, and we used that money to go and buy HD cameras and then to pay for a sound guy, because sound is extremely important. And so improving the quality of the product that we were putting out was one of the most important things, putting out, you know, a web series, especially comedy as well. Because if people can't hear your stuff or they can't see your stuff well enough, I know it sounds so simple and so basic, but if they can't hear it or see it and it's supposed to be comedy, then they won't get it. It'll take too long and they won't recommend it to their friends and it won't become viral. So
I have a follow-up question.
I just wanted to add, there's a famous quote from George Lucas that sound is 50% of the experience. So just want to emphasize that sound is really important, even when it comes to web video.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Are you done? 5-0.
Yeah. I mean, so the first things were, you don't need the best equipment just to get started, but if you, you know, can afford it, if you have... You know, if anybody has something that you can borrow, you can shoot with that stuff. I think the other thing and the most important tip, and again, it seems like such a simple tip, but the most success that we had with any video that we've ever put out was that we put out something that was extremely timely. I mean, like, everybody has seen those recent videos, the, you know, blank, was it shit? What is the name of those videos that everybody saw? Shit you shouldn't do or shit?
It's like
shit,
oh, yeah.
Black girls say,
shit black girls say, shit women say. Shit
those videos have like 17 million views.
And
I have some friends that have made them that got signed to ICM and, you know, CAA off of making like one little video. And the videos are funny. They're cool. But it's not like they're the most brilliant thing you've ever seen. But they're timely because everybody's doing them and they're popular. The video that I'm going to show you guys is not necessarily my favorite video. Mm-hmm. But I think what's interesting about the video is that it was extremely timely. We had a member of my cast that looks just like LeBron James. And so we were like, man, like, one of my writers was like, we should do a sketch. Do you guys remember this Tiger Woods commercial where he's standing in front of a field and he's talking? His, like, dad's voice is over that commercial. He was like, how hilarious would it be if we had Lou get up there dressed as LeBron James and we'll have his dad talking to him? And I was like, oh, dude, that is hilarious. Well, so I thought it was just going to be funny if we put that out. But the thing is, we put it out, and it happened to be at the very exact same time that LeBron James announced the decision. So we put it out and had like 400,000 views in the first week. But I mean, it's so much about having a good idea and being about timing. But what you'll see also is that we've done other productions that cost us thousands of dollars. I literally took my little Panasonic HVX and Lou dressed as LeBron James to the top of a hill in Los Angeles and shot for like 15 minutes. And then it was just like the most successful thing that we ever did up to that point. So it was crazy.
That's amazing. So my follow-up question, one of the things that you mentioned, Brendan, is about that every Monday morning you knew that Purple TV was going to have a new sketch up. So Liz, I'd like to ask you, like, what I see, it might be obvious to me, but what is the value of the repetition? How long is it going to take you? You know, like, what should we be thinking about, you know, in the terms of the long haul? How much money do you need? How much, you know, blood, sweat, and tears do you need? How long should you be praying to the short film gods that someone's going to watch your stuff?
Well, I think what it comes down to, the answer is I can't tell you. I know people who have been religiously producing content for years and have never managed to get a foothold. I know people who randomly threw up some stuff and, you know, became viral sensations. And I think what's key is that you keep things sustainable. Like, you don't, you know, it's, yeah, you're going to spend a little money. You're going to invest some money when you first get started. You're going to be operating at a deficit. Okay. But if as long as you keep that reasonable and as long as you have in mind certain goals and objectives you want to reach with your content, then I think it's definitely possible possible to do that. But there's a lot of factors involved. You have to build your audience. You have to, you know, make sure, you know, and putting out content regularly, though, is a great way to build your audience because people respect that and people get, you know, it's the expectation and people enjoy that element of quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you. So I would like to move down our table here and ask you, Chris, as someone who's worked in film festivals myself for 20 years now, I've seen when filmmakers ask me how important is it for me to get my short out there on the festival circuit and have a fantastic festival run and do what you've read about in different books, you know, interviews with filmmakers who say, well, I got my film into Tribeca, or I got my film into Miami, or I got my film into Sundance, and then I got into another 50 festivals, and I got an agent, and I got this, and I got that. I'm not sure. I think that there's an argument to be had on the value that has changed from what it used to be. Is it still as valuable? Mm-hmm. What kinds of short form content actually prosper on the festival circuit? Mm-hmm. Chris? Holland.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, but two Chris's next to each other.
Yeah, Chris. I, for the record, it's Christine and Chris.
Right.
Okay.
Got it. The festival circuit, once you're on it, really gives back what you put into it, mm-hmm. provided you know what you want out of it. Most filmmakers going in, knowing that they should be going to film festivals, knowing that festivals have some benefits, but they don't know what those benefits are or which ones they want. So if your goal as a short filmmaker is to get your money back, then you have a bunch of decisions to make that are relative to that, and you know, you probably need some help making them. If your goal is to get the film seen by as many people as possible, maybe the festival circuit isn't what you want to do. Maybe you want to put it on YouTube. If your goal is to become a working filmmaker with a career, then yeah, the festival circuit is exactly where you want to be, because that's where you're going to meet the other people in the industry, make friends, and start working or keep working. If your goal is to change the world, festivals might help you, you know, get the recognition and the credibility you need, so that when other people see your film, you have sort of that stamp of approval to, you know, to make other screenings happen. So festivals have a lot to offer. I'm not sure they, you know, that the things they have to offer are necessarily what filmmakers think they are, but you know what your goals are, and then figure out whether festivals are the place for you to be.
Sure. Can you give us an example of, you're this filmmaker, this is what the film festival circuit has to offer you? Like, who really prospers on the festival circuit?
I refer to film festivals as an ongoing career fair for filmmakers. Mm-hmm. There is the chance that as a feature filmmaker primarily, but sometimes short films, can achieve distribution through the festival circuit, there is the chance that you will meet someone on the festival path who can help your film get to the right people and help change the world. But primarily, the people you're going to meet are other filmmakers and other people working in the industry. And they may not be able to help you sell your film or get your film, you know, to the right distributor, but they probably can refer you to someone who can help you with your cinematography, or they can, you know, get you work on the set of someone else. Or maybe, you know, I know a lot of filmmakers who met their significant others on the festival and suddenly they became, you know, filmmaking partners, and some of them start their own distribution companies and do their own thing. So it just, as a distribution method, festivals may not be the best thing, but you're certainly going to meet other people of like minds and make friends.
Absolutely, and create a community.
Yeah.
of your peers. So, moving, like, touching off on that film festivals. You know, I've always said that for short films, film festivals are your theatrical release. Essentially, you get to see your film on a big screen where, you know, that wasn't always possible. You get to get audience feedback from, you know, in a Q&A scenario, and actually get feedback on your art, which is critical, I believe, for artists, and knowing, you know, and also get to see what other people are making out there. I feel, you know, I just gave a talk at Columbia with an MFA class. 75, I asked, who in the room has seen 5 shorts this week? Very few hands went up. Who in this room has seen 5 shorts this month, 5 shorts this last 6 months? And they can't be part of your peers. You have to do your work. You have to do your homework. I see so many films, you know, because obviously I'm sure that we all do. Filmmakers coming to me asking me why they're not getting selected for film festivals. It's like, well, because that film was made 10 years ago, and that's already done the film festival circuit. So can we talk about, I would love to talk about with Brandon and Liz, like, what you're seeing out there on the festival circuit that is fresh and interesting, and how those filmmakers have prospered. If you can think of one filmmaker you believe who stepped outside the box, did their homework, and was successful with that short content. Yes.
Well, recently I had the opportunity to interview, I'm blanking on his name.
That's
a short film called Time Freak. Andrew Bowler, that's his name. Andrew, I interviewed Andrew Bowler recently for a project, and Time Freak was nominated for an Academy Award. It was nominated for Best Narrative Short. It did not win, but that's all right. Because
did you think it deserved to win?
It was a good short. The reason I bring him up, though, is his stories, you know, he and his filmmaking partner slash wife decided they were going to invest a lot of money in making a very good short film. And he wrote like a clever original script about time travel. They shot it for a reason, you know, they shot it for probably they spent as much money as they could to make sure it was the best film they possibly could make it. And then they started submitting around to festivals. And because this is something I didn't know, but film festival experts probably did know, one of the ways in which you can become eligible to be nominated for an Academy Award is to win a film festival that is on the Academy's approved list. Mm-hmm. So they won the Seattle Film Festival, which made them eligible, and then they managed to somehow make the series of cuts down to being one of the five films nominated. He's didn't win an Academy Award, but his wife did get to hug George Clooney, and he is apparently smells as good as you think he does. But his wife got to hug George Clooney, and he actually just got, it was in the trades that he got picked up for representation by UTA. He's working on a feature length adaptation of the short. So I don't know if financially I don't know financially if they've made all their money back yet, but they have, his short has had a very clear, positive effect on his career.
I do have one film festival tip for you that I believe may even be in Film Fest Secrets, but getting your short, submitting your short to a festival where a lot of programmers attend, like this festival, if it's short form content, Palm Springs Short Film Festival, Toronto Short, you know, worldwide. There are a number of festivals where a lot of programmers attend, which can save you money in the long run for submission fees, because they'll invite you to submit your film as opposed to you going through the arduous task of without a box.
Yeah, be careful about Toronto, though. Toronto only plays Canadian shorts.
That's Toronto International. Toronto Worldwide, though, the Short Film Festival.
Right. I just wanted to make sure that was clear.
Yeah. The festival circuit is one way to go. And then there is obviously the internet. And I would love, you know, Brendan, for you to talk to us about how you feel. Who is the filmmaker who's going to succeed on the internet? The content. I want to talk about the content.
One of the ones that comes to mind immediately that I've heard about that was even, you know, on CNN yesterday, was down there at the CNN Grill interviewing, is Awkward Black Girl. Awkward Black Girl. Issa Rae. Yeah, I've heard people talking about her for about a year and a half, and she's had great press. She's had an amazing press. She has an amazing writer. But the two things that I think make her series successful are, one, like you said, it's a very unique voice. I think it's so important, and you just hear this all the time, that it almost seems like cliche, but she's telling her story. You know, she's telling something that's very unique to her, so she's passionate about it. Her writer is passionate about it. I think the thing that's unique to her story is that she talks about the fact that usually when you see black women portrayed in any kind of media, whether it's TV or music videos or film, that you don't see the Liz Lemon, that you don't see the Tina Fey, you know, mm-hmm. awkward black girl that, you know, most of you guys are probably friends with. Mm-hmm. You know, you see a totally different type of woman, and you're just like, oh, I don't know that girl. You know, and she was just like, well, I want to see myself, you know, portray it in some type of series. The other thing about it that I've experienced is that her show is episodic. I think it's so important on the web. Like, people love to follow a character and to fall in love with a character or characters. Mm-hmm. You know, just like it's the same thing in TV. You know, if you watch Friends or you watch Seinfeld and you got to know those characters and you laugh harder, you know, at their jokes because you know George Costanza so well. You know, because you know Jerry so well. It's the same thing with the Awkward Black Girl character, is that she's created something and then has, you know, her in several different experiences, you know, when you're following her. Where I've experienced actually difficulty with Purple Stuff because we're doing sketch and we oftentimes do different sketches. You know, we might do one sketch called For the Love of Jesus, and then we have another one, you know, about LeBron, and it's not like there's something for somebody to follow. They've actually just got to follow us as filmmakers because they think that what we do is funny. And it's easier to do the route that she's going with Aqua Black Girl, I think.
Mm-hmm. And she has a great team of people behind her.
She has a great, great team of people behind her. She has a fantastic writer behind her who I think actually just got a film deal. But when I go into meetings, they mention her to me. So I'm like, great, thanks.
Right, great. Well, I think that that's part of it. I feel like with short form content, with web series, with short films, that filmmakers, you know, are really still under the guy, you know, the guise of that, you know, it's just me and my camera and my two pals that I'm going to, you know, whack this out, when you still need to have a producer, you still need to have a director of photography, you still need to have a guy, you know, you still need the professional crew on set with you to, you know, the 50% of your film.
One thing, like, I will say about Purple Stuff Now is, you know, it's hard for people to believe because, you know, we do our stuff on the web and it's a little 6-minute thing, but I'm like, yeah, there are like 40 of us. Mm-hmm. Like, I have a team of 8 writers. We get together in a writer's room just like a regular TV show and we pitch out ideas and then we get rid of the ones that aren't that good and we keep the ones that are great. We'll sit around for hours to beat out one of those ideas into a story. I'll assign one of those stories to a writer. They go home and write it. They come back with a script and we rewrite it 2 or 3 times. And then we go and shoot it and we have a full crew. We have a DP. He has a gaffer. We have a sound man that has it. You know, I'm like, mm-hmm. It's important to still do your product in a professional way so that you get the best, you know, project in the end.
Yeah, here, here. Yes. So moving on to the platforms that are available to us, short form content producers, I feel I, you know, have been around the block and was here with Adam and, you know, watched Shorts International grow to the place that it is. Christine, I would love to hear from you to talk about what benefits. I mean, you know, obviously you have a little bit of a bias, but what do you feel like, because I think that you can talk both sides. We've had conversations many times. I trust you implicitly. But what are the benefits for filmmakers to put their content online, and who are the filmmakers that succeed?
Right.
And what is the content, really? And, you know, I hate to be cliche about it, but there is stuff that people watch repeatedly.
That's very true.
Yeah.
Well, I first have to say, welcome to my world, everybody. Which I want to say is a new and growing world. So we've sort of looked at what we call a formula for success. And success in the context of this discussion is going to be ultimately monetizing your work. So the formula is, first of all, great quality. So something that everybody here has said. Because great quality is what attracts people to look at your work, right? Something we all know. From great quality, and so we call that second sort of variable, great quality equals great interest. Interest is the beginning of distribution on sort of using the digital platform. Interest leads to recognition. And it's funny because when you're talking about a film, sometimes it's the subject. Sometimes it's the timeliness of the event. Sometimes it's actually the filmmaker. But at that point, you have to then employ social media strategies because that's what explodes, frankly, recognition. So recognition becomes exposure or, as we like to say, distribution. We think the new distribution for short film on the internet is also known as views, right? Because that's what's really happening. So when we look at, you know, Joseph Kony, I don't know if anybody saw the Joseph Kony 30-minute video from last week, yeah. You know, which was sort of done by Invincible Children, an organization that wanted to champion, wrong word, but you get the point, hideous treatment of children on the African continent. In 72 hours, they had 9.8 million views. In any other language, that would be distribution. So we want to sort of begin to have the filmmaking community begin to recognize that views and distribution can be synonymous. I know you guys don't believe me, that's okay. But I really want you to consider the possibility. And from our side, that kind of that number of views and that therefore that distribution is the basis for monetization. That's what attracts people to your work. That's what attracts people to your product. And that's when people begin, as everybody has said here, to say, you know, how can we begin to negotiate some kind of development deal or something like that? So from our side, we feel very, very strongly that, you know, we would love it if the filmmaking community would begin to think about this in this sort of this internet opportunity, the digital opportunity, mm-hmm. and for the kind of opportunity that it could be.
Right.
When you ask the question, you know, sort of who does well,
What I know that if I want to weigh 140 pounds, I have to like stop drinking so much vodka and get on the treadmill, right? I know there are steps. Someone's right. laid them out for me all over the place. I can watch Dr. Oz. I know how to get there.
That's it.
How do people, you know, and so what I want to, you know, I know, but I want to share with the audience, what are the steps that you, that are required to do well on an internet platform?
Absolutely.
Do you know what I mean? So we're not talking about ad sales on, you know, Purple TV, you know, Purple Stuff TV. But we're talking about if you're going to go on a platform like Indie Films or Open Films or, you know, the Myriad, there's a number of, or you sell it off your website. How do you, what are the spots? We know that, you know, be a good Facebooker. I don't think that Facebook sells your movie. I really don't. I think that it's, there are way, there are far better ways to do
it. You can get some decent retention with Facebook,
yes.
but it's, I mean, it, that's, it's just an, it, but that's if you're using Facebook not to blast, you know, your message all over the place, but using it to create a community around your short film. I've seen a lot of films have a lot of success with creating, like, basically, you know, letting everyone post on their Facebook Facebook page's wall for the film and talk about seeing it and meeting the director at a screening and mm-hmm. oh, where can I see it next and all that sort of stuff. But sorry, I don't want to derail Facebook talk.
Well, yes, but I agree with you. But how do you monetize that? Because
right.
we all have, I don't know how many friends you all have on Facebook or how many people are following you on Twitter. I have thousands, and I'm not, I feel like, who are these people? And why, you know, mm-hmm. they might care about me for, you know, various reasons, but are they really supportive fans of my work?
And from our standpoint, I think that the social media piece for filmmakers, you know, the first point of attraction is that you guys as filmmakers want to tell a story or share a point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of immediately the people that respond to either your story or your point of view,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're sort of in conversation with them
mm-hmm.
in a strange
mm-hmm.
way. You know, it's sort of, it's not something that you necessarily notice, but that's what's going on. And they are interested in responding, do you know what I mean, to what you do. And they do sometimes in the form of blogs or in the form of comments or in the form of in forums, you know what I mean? Or
mm-hmm.
so they're dialoguing with you. And I think the first point is to recognize in that particular way that it's going to be very important for you in whatever form you choose to sort of to respond to the people that are responding to you. Do you know what I mean? And it can be just, you know, a sort of a posting every now and then. I mean, it's not something that it's not laborious. Do you know what I mean? You have to do it. You don't have to do it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But you just have to let people know that you appreciate that they're interested in the work that you're doing.
And that the work is out there.
And that the work is out there.
Right. So, which leads me to, because I feel, you know, I get probably at least 5, probably 10 emails a day from filmmakers. And the first sentence is, "Hey, Roberta, I'd really love to pick your brain about blank. Hi, Roberta. I know you're really busy, but if you would take a look at my short and let me know what you think about it, I'd be really grateful. Sincerely, Crazy Filmmaker."
Pay you, but I'd really love your professional opinion.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's like, yeah, I mean, that's what I do get paid for, but one of the things I get paid for. But I think I would like to give you all a way to get feedback from people that if you can't pay for it. And I want to talk with you, Chris, about that. Because sometimes I will click on it. You know, if I'm avoiding my girlfriend or I'm, you know, you might catch me in a good moment and I will watch it. And if it's not good, I just don't respond. And if it is good, then I, you know, I usually say, great job. But there are ways to get feedback on your work other than rejection letters from festivals or, you know, having your emails ignored by Roberta Monroe. And Chris, I think you have a lot of really good ideas on how people can get their work out there.
Thank you. And I'm going to try to think of some.
TikTok.
Yeah. One of my big pieces of festival advice is to be a nice person.
For sure.
And part of being a nice person is showing up so that people can tell you're a nice person. Emails are really impersonal form of communication. It's really easy to ignore. It's really easy to just hit delete or, you know, ignore a piece of email, because festival programmers just don't have time to answer every piece of email. You can get feedback from a festival programmer who's rejected your film if you contact them at the right time. And the right time is not when they send you the rejection letter, because that's when they're telling everybody no, and the people they didn't say no to, they have to gear up to start showing their film at the festival. The right time to ask is a month, 6 weeks after the festival has ended, and say, hey, I hope you had a really great festival. And my film was blah, blah, blah. It didn't get in, and I understand why, but I'd like to know more. And if you could maybe tell me a little bit more, I would love to schedule a 10-minute call with you. Just make sure it's going to be brief. Or even if you have any notes from the people who viewed it, you know, pre-screened it. Because chances are the programmer, the decision maker, probably didn't even see your film. That's even more likely, you know, the further up the festival ladder you go. What was that, 7,800 shorts you said?
Well, actually at Sundance it's different, because programmers see every single short film that comes in.
Right, but maybe not the one who's making a decision for that particular. Let's not go into semantics on that.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
I just want to be clear on that.
Screeners, not everybody sees every short. They get watched. They get watched by people who care about film. Most of the time they get watched more than once. It's not an entirely impersonal thing, but a lot of festivals rely on people to help them watch, you know, the films that they see. So they can go back to screener A, screener B, say, hey, you gave this film, you know, a 3 out of 5. Can you tell me why? That's a great way to get feedback on your film. It's getting back to the show up and be a nice person thing. You know, you've done the right thing by showing up at this festival. And, yeah, it's hard to track festival programmers down, but, hey, you know, they show up at the mentoring sessions that you can sign up for. If you don't know about South by Southwest mentoring sessions, they're a great way to meet people in the industry and get free advice, even if it's only for 10 minutes. And they speak on panels. Go to the panels. Talk to them afterwards. It's really tough for somebody to say no when somebody's standing in front of them and says, hey, could you take a look at my film? Really difficult. And most of them will, I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a programmer say no.
Well, it's their job to watch your movie.
Exactly.
So
yes. You know, they'll take your film and they'll watch it, and maybe they'll hear back from them if you're persistent and remind them, hey, I saw you at, just say, can I get your card? That way you've got their email address. You can talk directly to them. And if you, you know, don't follow them into the bathroom to ask the question, but, you know, be a human being, be a mensch, and, you know, they will treat you accordingly.
One of the festivals that I know of off the top of my head that will give you feedback if your film doesn't get in is DC Shorts. They give full feedback on your short film. So they're somewhere, and their submissions are up right now. So would be a great opportunity for you to send your work in. And if you get rejected, you get feedback. And if you get accepted, you'll get feedback at one of their cocktail parties. So.
This is hugely unusual. The programmer of that festival is... I'm going to say it. He's an insanely nice guy.
Yes.
The emphasis for me on insane. John Gann, wonderful human being. I don't know how he has time to do it, but he promises he will give feedback on your film, whether it gets in or not. So that might be worth a submission fee in and of itself.
Yeah, he doesn't always personally do it, but you'll get the actual notes back from the screener and what they thought of your film. And it's pretty extensive. I was surprised. Yes. So I would like to, we have about 20-ish minutes left, and I'm assuming that you guys have questions, smart, charming, well-constructed questions that you wait for the mic, and I would like to open it up for questions. So you went first, so if you could come fast and get the mic, and then I see you guys over there.
Do you think...
And tell us who you are.
Oh, I'm Mike Demanskis. I work for the Second City Network YouTube channel. Do you think putting your short up on YouTube and it doing well is something that makes your short less valuable for the festival circuit if it's already readily available online for free? Or do you think that, you know, seeing that 100,000 people have seen it and liked it is something that helps you?
I think it's something that helps you. I think it depends on the festivals. And festivals are slow to come to... Jesus about this fact that people are putting their work up online, and that if you want to show great work, you're going to have to contend with the fact that it was already online. Festivals like Sundance will show your work and put your work online for you. Liz, do you have it? And Chris? Yeah.
Sundance is actually one of the only festivals I know that will play a film after it's been on YouTube. And I think that's because they have the luxury of not worrying about whether the audience is going to show up or not.
Yeah.
I think that luxury is actually false. I think that the kind of people who come to shorts blocks, you know, at festivals are not going to be put off by the fact that a film is available on YouTube. They want to see it with an audience. They want to see it on a big screen. And one film out of a block of, you know, of 12 that's on YouTube, what's the big deal? So I wish festivals would sort of loosen up about that. But the reality is festivals want to put butts in seats, and they're scared that if they have films that are available on YouTube, the audience will stay home.
I think it's also you know, the thing is maybe don't put that short online, but put a short online and have some sort of demonstrated success within the online sphere. I think everybody, you know, the hardest thing with breaking in is to have that one, get that first credential that leads to the next credential, that leads to the next credential. And, you know, it's really just like the hardest thing is getting, like, you know, if you can say, you know, it's like winning an award or selling a screenplay once you have one person, once you have acknowledgement from one person that you've done something worth paying attention to, it's much easier to get attention from the second and the third and the fourth person. So, and in this case, like, yeah, if you have 100,000 views on YouTube for your short film, which is impressive, actually, because short films can sometimes have a hard time getting traction on YouTube if they're specifically drama shorts or drama or documentary content. If you can point to that kind of statistic, I think people will take you more seriously.
I think that's what web series are valuable for, is building that audience. The most successful short films on YouTube, in my opinion, are web series. Series like Brandon's, series like The Guild, and, you know, people who have made really smart choices about how they make those web series available once they have an audience. You know, being consistent, being funny. So I think you really need to think about, is there a web series that I can do cheaply, that I can do consistently, and that it will be, you know, be funny and bring in an audience? Because that's, I don't know, I'm the kind of guy, I don't sit down to watch a documentary about shark attacks, you know, a 3-minute documentary about shark attacks on YouTube. I sit down to escape from my work for a minute and laugh. Actually, I'm kind of curious what the sign language for shark attack is. I'm just say that a few more times. Shark attack. Sorry.
Good. Thank you.
Sorry.
Sir. Blue shirt. Blue shirt, then flower. Mike. Oh, you do? Yeah. Let me tell you, you need a mic.
Okay.
No chatting without a mic. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jeff.
Hi, Jeff.
So most of the examples you gave, and it seems like common sense from just, you know, watching things online, would suggest that the stuff that does really well is like parodies, comedies, stuff that's high concept, that has a hook, you know, that you get immediately. And I'm wondering if you're a filmmaker who makes things that are maybe more subtle or quiet or
horror,
not easily sort of...
I agree with what you're saying, and I believe that we are sort of saying that up here. But also, really, when you step beyond that, it's what emotionally hooks you. So it's not just comedy, and it's not just crazy effed up horror. It's what emotionally connects people to sit there and watch something for longer than 3 minutes online.
So if I can
please.
I'm just wondering if you think there's an audience, or if there's a specific site that I just haven't heard of that sort of caters more to that kind of content.
It sounds like you're asking for a tactic. And that's, I mean,
a
tactic. Like, what site can fix my problem? What, you know, where can I go to find that audience? But the real issue is, who is your audience? You know, where do they hang out? Like, you have to do that identification of, I'm making, you know, thoughtful, emotional films about flowers blooming. Well, okay, break it down. Who are the people who like flowers blooming? You know, even if it's just really mundane stuff, like florists. Florists like flowers blooming. Let me go talk to a florist. Do they have professional organizations? And, you know, that's how you find and build an audience. And, yes, I mentioned comedies because they tend to get passed around a lot. But, you know, there are people out there who have self-organized into groups around whatever your subject matter is, whether it's, you know, sex, whether it's skydiving, whether it's shark attacks. You know, you have an audience. You just haven't found it yet.
Great. Yeah. Thank you. One second. I'm gonna moderate for 1 second and let Liz answer this next question. I'm going to get to you, Christine. I'll come to you.
They're out of control.
We are an unruly bunch. I feel like one of the most successful, I would argue one of the most successful shorts of 2000, most successful piece of online content of 2011 was the short film, the short portal film that was made by Dan Trachtenberg last fall. And basically what he did was he did what he would consider his take on a movie based on Portal. Which is the video game where you get to shoot the things and you go through the things. It's very fun.
Oh, you should
look into it.
I saw that one.
But the reason I would say it got huge views because Dan Trachtenberg already had an audience through a web series he does called The Totally Rad Show. He also managed to, so it got huge views. It got a lot of traction because of gaming blogs. And this is not, but this is a 6 minute short film. The portal technology doesn't show up until minute three. The first 3 minutes are watching a woman in a tank top do push ups. It's a very well made. She's very hot. Yes. It's a very well made movie, but, It's a slow piece of content. It takes time to build, and it was very successful because it also got the other thing, which is it got him a lot of attention as a director. That then translated, I believe, into meetings, into conversations, and you know he might end up making a Portal movie. We don't know at this point, but that's, I mean, what Chris is saying is absolutely true. Like having. Knowing your, finding the audience for whatever you're making and going for it. That's why the shit blank says videos are so successful. Because, I wish that happened every time I was about to make a point. That'd be great. No, let me finish what I was saying. The reason stuff blank says videos were really successful because they were appealing to a specific audience. Like you would be like, I'm a Battlestar Galactica fan, and I do say that. Like that's why there were. That's why they had such a foothold.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Christine, did you have something that you wanted to add?
Well, I was going to say that one of the things that happens when you begin to really sort of think about the online distribution piece is that not only can you build your audience, but there are, generally speaking, tremendous analytics, you know, that you need to mine. And the analytics behind your work will show you where your audiences are coming from. And they're, generally speaking, global analytics, because one of the things that's happened, you know, as a result of the digital platforms is that you cross, you know, sort of political boundaries. And there could be people in Buenos Aires, for instance, who would have an interest in your work and you would never know it. Do you know what I mean? And so you begin to think about your work and how people experience it and sort of and find ways to engage and hold them as an audience.
Keep that audience, yes. Brandon, briefly.
I was going to say the same thing as, I mean, just to be a little tech nerdy, you need to know about the your SEO. And if you have a website, you should Google yourself. You should Google your website and maybe think of 10 different words that you would Google if you were looking for a video like yours. And do you come up? Are you on the first page? Are you even on the first 100 pages? You know, you should try to find somebody that can make you be the first one that comes up. I mean, especially if it's something that's really obscure, if it's, you know, watching flowers bloom or something like that, then, you know, you should be the first thing that comes up, or at least on the first page whenever anybody Googles flowers. And there are people out there that can help you do that.
Yeah. Or selecting a title. Selecting a title is important.
Selecting a title.
I mean, yeah, you don't want to call your film what is already on IMDb 47 times. Yes, flower.
Okay. Netflix is so popular now, and it has so many features on it. And you mentioned... You, like, spoke to a class of how many shorts have you watched this week? There's so many videos on YouTube. Sometimes it's hard to weed through the good and the bad. Is there any other website that you can recommend that would have a good deal of quality shorts on it?
Of course. I mean, there's so many. And what I'm not being flip, but what I'll say to you is I say to everyone, you just go to Google and type in short films online. And you will get a number. There's short film of the week. There's short film online. There's a number of sites where you can watch work, as well as some festivals will do an online portion of their festival, and they'll have, it's usually the shorts that are online and not the features, but you'll be able to watch what actually got programmed at that festival and see what content they're looking for, which is, I think, crucial. Yes.
In regards to that, at South by this year, they had a Vimeo Loves screening where they actually pulled content from Vimeo, which is a really great site that I like to watch short films.
But Vimeo is also on its way to being YouTube, right? In terms of like anyone can upload to it, and you still have to weed through. It's not curated.
There is a Vimeo community though of filmmakers who do. You know, like if you go into if you dig a little deeper into it, like they have a lot of stuff out there for filmmakers to create quality shorts, and I think there's, as a result, there's a community born out of that. So there might be some curation at Vimeo. Sorry.
Yeah. My name is Debbie Serda. I write for Slackerwood.com.
Hi, Debbie.
Austin Film Society Shortcase curator now. And I just want to kind of speak to something Christine said, as well as pulling something else you said, and that was about. Filmmakers recognizing their audience and dialoguing with them.
Yeah.
And one of the articles I write about is crowdfunding, and I see time after time that the failed projects are where people have not provided updates and information to their backers. And I think that is critical because, one, you've got to start that dialogue then. Secondly, you're talking about getting someone who knows, or you should know SEO. You don't need to. But if you built that foundation, then you can go back to those backers and say, hey, guys, I need some help. Does anyone know social media? And let someone else do that for you.
Mm-hmm.
Because the filmmakers are so busy doing their craft.
That's right.
That I see time after time when I try to – I've been doing short film coverage for years. It pains me to see how little effort and free you can do through Facebook and Twitter that doesn't happen with short filmmakers.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Excellent point.
That's a very excellent point. Yes, white sweater.
Uh-oh.
Gotcha.
Wendy's waving.
The jazz hands are happening in the back.
We might be done.
Yes.
I think a lot of what you guys are saying is really good advice, and I was wondering if it all holds true for animated shorts as well, if the festival route is, you know, just as successful as online.
I would agree with that. Does anyone else have something that they...
If there's anything different about animated shorts?
I think animated shorts have, if anything, an advantage.
An advantage, yeah.
Because there's a dearth of really good material. And every festival that has a shorts program usually has an animated shorts program. They're animated shorts festivals. I mean, programmers are hungry for this material, but it's got to be good. I mean, it's got to have a story that is as good as the animation.
Mm-hmm. I think from the online space that animation is probably one of the fastest growing sort of genres of filmmaking, you know, because it is such an extraordinary creative kind of framework. So,
and not everybody can do it.
Not everybody.
Anybody can pick up a camera, but not anybody can animate. Yeah. It's definitely, yeah, or well.
Yeah, and I think the one thing about animated shorts online, most especially if they're dialogue free, is that they can play globally without subtitles. Like if you have, you know, anyone in any country can understand a well-made animated short that doesn't have any dialogue. I mean, the same is true if you make a live-action film that doesn't have any dialogue. But for some reason, quiet animated movies really work. Online.
We're in the home stretch here, and I would like, if anyone has a burning question that you can't find online or in my book or in Chris's book, please, okay, yes, microphone, get a move, thank you, yes.
How often do you see short filmmakers use short films to try to filter films? For film feature films.
How often?
Hold on. How often do you see short films stay short films or jump to features, or do they typically stay in their genre of short films?
Often they're moving on to features, mm-hmm. is the short answer. Mm-hmm. Yeah, often they're moving on to features. Mm-hmm. Unless we're working with web series where it's short form content, and that's what it is. That's the. I would like to, if the panel is up for this, take this last 4 or 5 minutes. And if you have any, if you all have any burning things you'd like to share with this audience on how to move forward in their short film extravaganzas, Chris. Holland.
I would just say, know where you want to be going. Know, you know, don't just make a film and go, okay, what do I do with it now? When filmmakers go to film festivals, one of the biggest mistakes they make is not having any idea of what they want to do next, because you're going to get asked. So what are you working on now, if you're at your Q&A, if nothing else? So write some treatments, have some ideas, and be ready to answer that question.
Mm-hmm.
My final comment is
Christine.
Sorry, moderator.
No.
is that there's a sort of the standard bearer for measuring sort of tablets and telephones and mobile platforms is called the International Telecommunication Union, and they project that there are going to be 4.6 billion devices worldwide by 2014. And that's 4.6 billion devices that people can see your work on. So this is an astoundingly large market, and I would urge you all to think about the digital platform as the next form of distribution.
Thank you. Brandon.
I would say two things. I would say make sure that whatever you're working on, that you're making like a really good quality project, that you're not rushing to do it, that you're actually like taking your time to go over the script, to hire the right cast, and, you know, just because you don't do something just because you want to get it done, like, make sure that it's really good because somebody is always watching. Like, an example of that is with Purple Stuff. We started off with some really low quality, you know, Circuit City cameras, but then we moved up to HD and then having a full crew to shoot our stuff. And I don't know who's watching, because some of our stuff doesn't get that many views. Some stuff gets, you know, millions of views. But then I got a call from a friend who works over at Universal who was looking to acquire a sketch show. And so now we've been in talks for the last 2 months, and it proves that somebody is always watching. And the other thing that's related to that is that people need so much content. Like, we're in an excellent position right now. I mean, YouTube has 100 new channels. I'm a producer for one of the YouTube channels. In addition to, like, there are 10 new channels on Comcast that are, like, you know, diversity channels. But there are so many people out there that are needing content, and that's not going to change. So we're in a great position for us to be making content and then refining our skills and making that content.
Great. Yes.
Aside from all the excellent advice that everyone else just said, I would say think about what you're making in a fluid fashion. Don't think, I am making a web series. It is for the web and nothing else. You could make a 10 episode web. If you make 10 episodes of a web series and those episodes are 10 minutes long, you just made a movie. Maybe think about, and so you could make something as a web series and then package it together as a movie and sell it that way. You could take it to a different place. You could, you know, nothing is locked in right now. You can definitely experiment, try things. The threshold is so low that you can experiment in a really exciting way, and people respond well to people who take chances. Yes. Audiences respond well to people who take chances.
Yes, and I would just like to say that of the filmmakers that I've seen who've been successful, as cliche as it sounds, are the ones who never give up. They make a short, it gets rejected 25 times. They make another one, it gets rejected 13 times. They make another one, and they get in. And the filmmakers who create community, which I believe is one of the greatest places, is what you're doing right now, is sitting in a room at a film festival where you're going to meet other great geniuses like yourself. And I want to say thank you very much to South by Southwest for having such an amazing slate of panels and special events. It's been extraordinary. I'd like to thank our panelists, and I would love to thank Christine Boulware for bringing us all together and making us do this. So thank you all for coming out this afternoon. Thank you.